You know, at the end of the day, this industry of talent acquisition, you can get lucky. You can absolutely get lucky. You can throw something on a job posting and get the right candidate through the door. But more often than not, it takes work. There's effort that needs to be put in, and you need to be tactical and strategic about how you go through each individual search.
Hey, this is Gareth Webb, and you're listening to Breakout, a show that cuts through the hiring noise. Here, you'll get an unfiltered view on what early and growth stage companies are doing so that you can take their best practices, processes, and frameworks and implement them to help you build teams more confidently. Taylor, thank you very much for setting some time aside to join us. Welcome to Breakout. I'm mixing up a little bit this week. We haven't had a peer on before. It's typically been a customer or somebody, an entrepreneur, founder, people leader from a technology company. So I think interesting this week to get somebody on who actually is much closer to what we do. So thanks for joining us. Do you want to give everybody a bit of a background and introduction?
Yeah, that'd be great. Well, first off, I appreciate you having me. I'm excited to get into some of these discussions and topics that are on the docket for the day. A little bit of background on myself. My name is Taylor Robinson. I'm the president of SearchWorks LLC, which is an executive recruiting company that really recruits across the board. A lot of our clients tend to be within the manufacturing and distribution space. We do a lot of on-site searches on behalf of our clients, not a whole lot of remote. We tend to be pulled into the process when it's a key leadership role that is required a strong professional for. And again, with the on-site piece of it, we tend to get brought in on our clients' most difficult searches. So if they can be successful with a job posting or a contingent search firm, they typically go that direction. But when those two avenues are not working out, they come to our firm, which is a fully retained executive recruiting firm that focuses heavily on candidate attraction and onboarding, as well as, the rest of the process as well. So I can get into some of that a little bit later, but that should work for now.
Perfect. Yeah, thank you very much. Good. So talk to us a little bit more about some example customers and some things that you've done this year, some completed mandates or searches that you've worked on this year. It's been a tricky year for the most part, especially in technology, but I want to kind of hear a bit about, what's been happening for you guys this year, what successes you've had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, when we're talking about technology, earlier this year, my firm filled a president role on behalf of a custom software development firm, about $100 million organization. And we're currently doing a search for their chief operating officer. Basically, they're one and two folks within the industry who are retiring, and they're looking to bring in some fresh blood to keep the success moving forward. Late last year, we executed a chief revenue officer on behalf of a data analytics company. So there's some examples of the type of work that we do that would be most relevant to the technology industry. Beyond that, if it is a search for a, director of software engineering or a vice president, CTO, if you will, that might be in a different industry, for example, manufacturing, distribution, construction, even, we tend to get pulled into those types of searches as well.
So it's probably been a good thing this year for you guys. So you're placing like technical leadership, but into more traditional, like not pure play technology companies. So, we mentioned before that like B2C technology, B2B SaaS has been hit very hard this year, that, all the companies are basically overraised and overstretched themselves in the last couple of years. So that served you well this year with some of the more traditional types of businesses?
Yeah, I would say for sure. It has been a tough year, no doubt. To your point about the technology industry, a lot of our clients inflated in 2021, 2022. And now 2023 has been a bit of a year of reckoning and kind of coming back. So overextended themselves, they're having to pull back a little bit, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there aren't key hires that still need to be made within the organization. Many times, even if you do go through some hardships within your organization from a revenue or financial perspective, those key leaders, many times it's good to have continuity there. So many times those positions still stay intact. Perhaps you get a chief revenue officer who gets chopped off because they're looking at revenues that are down, or you're looking at the key sales folks within the organization. So in our world, tech getting hit a little bit has not affected us too much because of the space that we work within. It's not the middle management or worker bees on the lower level where we're executing searches. A lot of those folks are first on the chopping block. So there's been a bit of continuity there and still a need for executive recruitment.
Yeah, without doubt. I think you said the two things that we've been, I mean, software engineering is a staple, like there's always a need there. And yeah, there's been more churn there. Product management has been probably the quieter spot for us. I'm interested to see how the year finishes out, but I kind of believe it will be that product management US-wide has been where the least amount of hiring has gone on, because you don't need lots of them. And recently, like Airbnb talked about their product orgs, and the reason they got very good at that was just by making the product orgs much, much smaller. Software engineering is pretty consistent, but by far and away, like sales and finance, so revenue and finance, obviously hand in hand, have been quite prolific actually this year. And to your point, more senior type people being brought in. And so have you seen that beyond just technology? Have you seen that with manufacturing, supply chain, other types of businesses that you partner with?
Yeah, as I said, you know, we've seen, as I called it, kind of a year of reckoning a little bit for some of these organizations.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that in our world, anything has changed significantly. You know, the world isn't on fire in those other types of industries. There have been, you know, some regulatory things that have gone on. You know, if you look at some of our clients who are connected or within the automobile manufacturing space, you just had the United Auto Workers strike that went on for the last several months. And that has created waves throughout many industries that touch that type of a world. So when those types of things happen, you know, it's not just Ford and GM that get hurt. It's a lot of their suppliers and a lot of their other organizations that they have to partner with that get hit. And that's a space where we've seen a little bit of a hit and just a little bit of uncertainty. You know, we haven't used that word a whole lot since 2020. It was all uncertainty. It was, we don't know what's going on. And that's really taken a dive. And this year, I think that's come up a little bit. You've been hearing about, we're going to have a recession in 2021. We're going to have a recession in 2022. We're going to have a recession in 2023. You know, depending on your opinion, you can say we're in a recession or not. I would say that we're not. But there is these constant fears that our clients have that, similar to 2020, that's still in mind. You know, the bottom fell out of the earth, basically, in 2020. And there's this fear that's going to happen again. So if your business isn't being directly hit in some of the ways that some of the other industries have been, you're still looking at 2024 and saying, do we want to make these key hires right now? Are we good with the personnel that we have? Are we willing to put in the money to continue to grow these teams? Or are we in a good financial position and we just want to see what happens? So there's this kind of push and pull of, do we want to go all in and then maybe have another recession type of situation next year? Or do we want to just hold back, look at our purse strings a little bit and see what happens? And that's more of what we're seeing right now this year, is this uncertainty and this fear that there could be some sort of, you know, more macroeconomic hit that the whole entire, you know, United States or even the world takes in 2024. And so that's causing a lot of anxiety. It's causing a lot of pause for our clients when it comes to hiring.
Yeah. So you said something in the middle of that, which was the whole see what happens. And I think that's been 90%+ of people in most industries this year, just obviously largely governed by the overextension of post-pandemic kind of euphoria, for want of a better phrase, then Russia. Then the big one has obviously been interest rates, which is just came probably too thick and too fast in one particular area, like period of time. But looks like that's cooling off a little bit, which seems to be making people feel a little bit better about 2024. Tell us a little bit about, you know, we're all in a very competitive and scrutinized industry. How do you, as a business, make sure you set yourselves apart, like, you know, as the leader of the business, what are the kind of standards and operating models that you're bringing in to try and differentiate?
Well, the last several years, you've had this whole war on talent, as they've been calling it. You know, we can't find the right talents. You know, people are asking for too much compensation, and our level that we're looking within just doesn't match that. And so we can't hire folks that we might want to hire, but they're just asking for too much money. So one of the things that we do that's a bit different is we put a very high emphasis on candidate attraction. So how do we attract candidates to our opportunities? Now, we're a third party recruiting firm. So we can't, you know, put in a bunch of marketing on behalf of our clients to try and make the entire world know their name and be interested in coming to work there. We need to start off from scratch, essentially. So when we're talking about a particular role within an organization, we want to focus on who are the people that we're attracting and what do they want to know about the organization that's going to make them interested in actually throwing their hat in the ring and going through the interview process, which takes a whole lot of time. People are, especially if they're working, they're not at a point where they can just take interviews all over the place. They need to be picky. And there's so many recruiters reaching out to the top candidates that they do have their pick of the litter a little bit. So one of the things that we do is we focus our job descriptions, which we customize for every single search, and we focus on why should someone want to work here? So at least three bullet points about the growth of the business, the culture of the business, how they started, what they stand for. You know, are they going to go through an acquisition next year? What are they doing to continue to grow the business? Everybody wants to work for a growing organization. And if it's not a growing organization, they want to know that they're going to be happy there. They're going to be satisfied. They're going to be able to take care of their families, and they're going to be trained, and they're going to be able to move their personal or their professional lives forward through learning. So that's a couple of things that we do from a business standpoint. From the particular role standpoint, why should I care about this role? I've got five other roles that have the exact same job title. For similar, you know, businesses, why is yours the best? Well, maybe there is room for advancement in the next several years. Maybe the next person ahead of you is going to be retiring in 2 or 3 years, and you'll be the first person up for promotion. We want to say that right off the bat. So when you look at our job descriptions, 2/3 of it is about why you should want to work there and why you should want this job. And the final third of it is about qualifications and responsibilities and whatnot. But a lot of times those are cookie cutter. You know, you copy and paste, just say, here's a, you know, director of software engineering or what have you, and it's going to look very similar. So we put that on the back burner and we focus on the other piece of it. So that's one of the things that we do just from the paper job description standpoint. The other thing we do to attract talent is every one of our searches, we make a video job description. So the hiring manager or the leader of the company, whoever it may be, that's the best person suited for that role, I interview that person. We interview them, we record them over Zoom, just like we are here today. And we chop that interview up into small snippets to say, who's the company that's hiring? And tell me, verbalize what it is that you do. Verbalize the position that you're hiring for and what this person's going to be doing. And then the third part is, who is the ideal candidate? Well, you can stand there and you can verbalize they need to have 10 years of experience in this, and they need to have a bachelor's degree in that and a certification in this. You can find that on paper. Who cares? Like we can write that down. So what we do is we tell the hiring manager to describe the type of person, their personality. Do you like to work with teams? Do you like to lead others? Do you like to kind of be more home on your own? You know, what type of environment are you successful in? And that not only attracts people to the opportunity because they can now see themselves and say, yeah, that sounds like me. I should go for this one. Or they say, that's not really who I am. I don't really want to work in that environment. And then they turn down the interview process, which then saves us time later on. So candidate attraction is very important to us. You can give a list of 100 candidates to one recruiting firm and a list of 100 candidates to another recruiting firm. And the way that they go about that initial step is going to change the results at the beginning and then, you know, at the end of the process as well. So we put a lot of time in even before the search actually starts.
I think that people don't understand like the art of engagement, and that's really key. Like there's one piece of skill to identify who are categorically the best people for a job on paper. I think there is a real science to that. But then the art part of engaging people is like what's going to capture their attention when they're, like you said, time poor, probably stressed out because they've got big jobs. They're responsible for a lot of money or a lot of people, shareholders breathing down the neck, you know, and they're trying to do well in the environment they're in. But then if you're going to put something to distract them from that, which is essentially what's happening, like how are you going to do that in the right way to make sure they are bought in early? And I think that it's a real skill. So you interview the client, i.e. the business, and you ask them all these questions, and then you basically break it down into like almost like a mini, like a reel or an infomercial, like a mini, like a documentary type thing on like what that position is and what that client is, just so that people can get a better sense for it.
Yeah, it humanizes the opportunity first off.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
But secondly, if I'm a high-level professional who's highly sought after, I might be getting one, two, three messages a day from recruiters. Which one am I going to click on? Which one am I going to move forward with? And which one am I going to spend the time, to your point, to go through the interview process with? Well, if I'm that person and I'm getting PDF documents left and right, I don't have the time to look through all those. However,
Yeah.
if I get a message that says, "Here, watch this video of the president of the company describe the company and the opportunity and the ideal candidate," now I'm going, "Oh, that's different. I'm going to click on that." I might not want to sit there and read a job description that also is just copy and pasted, responsibilities and duties. But if I can watch somebody tell me about the company and all these things, I don't have to go do background research and look on Google and read about the company. Now, all of a sudden, in 2 or 3 minutes, I know if this is the right opportunity or not. And it's something I'm going to click on because I get to watch it. The days of written content, I mean, look at TikTok, it's not dead, but video is so commonplace and should be used within every single process almost across the bank, that we really need to lean into that. I mean, even if you look at training, would you rather give somebody a booklet and say, "Hey, here's your training booklet. Why don't you read through it and learn how to do this?" Or do you send them to a bunch of links that have videos of a person showing them on their computer how to use this technology, how to use their system, or what have you? Most people are going to watch the video, and that's our thinking.
Yeah, I agree. So interestingly, I was at my previous company. It was called Hired. It was I worked at was not my previous company. I worked at a company previous to called Hired, which was really successful at the time. It was software engineering marketplace and matching environment. And I went to an event which we sponsored, I believe, and I ended up sat next to one of the European leaders of talent acquisition for Microsoft. And even he said that they had difficulty with response rates from software engineers, like even from the mighty Microsoft. And it wasn't that what they had wasn't compelling. It was just another link or bunch of text, as you said, that people just don't really want to give the mental bandwidth to. So they ended up, the talent acquisition person for the hiring manager would go and sit with them and just on a phone, just sit in front of them and record, saying, like, just describe the position. And then they would do that. And then they would get the profiles of the people that they like the most and like categorically talk to them. So it'd be like, oh, hey, Gareth, we like your background. Or hey, Taylor, we like your background. Could you please like engage and come in and talk to me? And they found that massively increased their response rates for candidates and talent. So I think you're spot on. How long does that take you? Like just on a production and time taken basis, like is it a big ordeal?
Well, I'm always concerned with how much of my clients' time am I going to be taking up. I don't want to be a burden on them. If I'm a burden, they're going to go with another firm that doesn't take up as much of their time. So to shoot these video, one, the onboarding of the client is pretty standard. You ask them questions, you get to the depth of all these things. The thing that we do a little bit differently is like, okay, so why would someone want to work here? That's a question that really needs to be asked, and they need to have a fairly compelling answer for that. Most people do. They're proud of their companies, they're proud of the work that they're doing, and they've got good reasons, but that just doesn't get translated to the candidates. It's just, here's a two sentences of what the company is, and then we're getting right into the responsibilities of the role. The videos take about 20 minutes. So we try and keep them between 2 and 4 minutes, the end clip. And that's all the time it takes. So if you're willing to get on Zoom with me for 20 minutes, let me ask you some questions. We keep it moving. And then I send that to a professional videographer who edits it and makes it look fancy and all nice and everything else, a professional. And it takes him less than an hour. So we eat that cost, the cost that it takes to do all of that. That's part of our standard, if you will. And it's, even though it takes profitability out of our pocket a little bit, we understand the importance of it. And so we'd rather be a little bit less profitable, but more successful in what we do.
Yeah, and give a better experience. Interesting. Yeah, like I think it's a very do you send it out immediately? If you're approaching somebody that you deem to be a really good fit, will you send that out straight away?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you do. Interesting.
Absolutely. Typically our messages are not, "Hey, Gareth, I saw your background. I think you'd be great for this role. Please look at the attached, job description."
Yeah.
They're going, it's saying, "Hey, Gareth, we saw your background. We really like it. For this role, here's a link to a video of the hiring manager discussing the role." So it's right there out in front. They don't have to go to the job description and then find it in there. It's not hidden. We put it
Yeah,
out
yeah.
there right away, and that gets more clicks. And then once they watch the video, then they open up the written job description for more information and they respond.
Right, and then you have probably a better discussion because there's more upfront context about what's going on, so you can go deeper when you're having an initial conversation with them. That's very good. This came up yesterday. I haven't really used it too much. Shamefully, I read a lot about it, but in terms of artificial intelligence within the sector and within the space of hiring. I talked to another business hiring company CEO this week who was not too worried about it. He was like, there's so much judgment and there's so much relationships. I'm a bit the other way. Like, I think it's going to be huge in certain pockets of talent and hiring and potentially search. What's your views on it and how deep have you gone into that rabbit hole so far?
Well, I'm a bit split on this subject. And one of the reasons I'm a bit split on it is because we're kind of acting like artificial intelligence is a new thing. It's not. I mean,
Yeah, right, true. Yeah.
Indeed has been out for 15 years, and Indeed uses artificial intelligence to match people. That's been around. That's not a new thing. Artificial intelligence, when it comes to the really writing is kind of the new piece of it. ChatGPT, that's the kind of the new thing that's come
Yeah,
out, but
creation. Yeah.
artificial intelligence has been around for a long time and it hasn't rocked our world. So is it going to get more advanced and are we going to begin using it more? Absolutely. My thinking is that if I'm a candidate, and I'm just going to speak to our world that we're talking about right now, if I'm a candidate and I get a message, and I get these all the time in my email inbox, it is a template written email that I look at and I go, "This was written by a computer," or, "They sent this to a million other people." And it
Yeah.
just doesn't hold the same value. So if artificial intelligence gets to the point where it can truly mimic how a person writes, and I can read it and go, "That looks like it was written by a person," that might be, a big game changer. There's a couple of co companies out there right now who are using artificial intelligence to actually write emails to candidates to say, they kind of take in the background and they use some pieces of that. And that I think there's some value in, but then that's where it stops. Then you need to have a person interview these people. I am never going to, if I was on the job market, I'm not going to talk to a computer. There's some organizations for lower level roles that will have people interview with a computer. Tell me about yourself in a minute. And then you do
Yeah.
that, artificial intelligence kind of
I
without.
have seen some of that. We had one client use that and people did not love it.
No, they hate it. It's terrible. If I'm making a career change, something that's going to impact me 5 days a week, it's going to impact my family, it's going to impact how I feel on a day-to-day basis, I'm not
Yeah.
leaving that up to the computer. I need to talk to a human being. I need to ask questions. Where I have seen it be successful, and this is where it's probably really going to come into play in our world, I think, is chatbots. So if I go to a careers page for an organization and I'm interested in a role, many times our first question we get from candidates is, "Is this an on-site opportunity?" It should say that on there already. But let's
Yeah,
say
but it does
I
sometimes
ask
doesn't,
the
does it?
chatbot, "Is this an on-site opportunity?" Automatically, there's no person on the other side of that. What does the healthcare and benefits package look like? And it can give you
Yeah.
kind of a readout of that. Basic questions about the company. When was the company founded? Boom, chatbot giving you that information. So you can cut through some of the initial questions that candidates have through chatbots. So that I think will become more commonplace, especially on career pages of hiring teams.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much on Indeed and on other websites and what have you. So I see it being a big impact there, but this is a human business. You're working with humans. This isn't an automated world. You can automate the messages that get sent out. You can automate a lot of the pieces, but at the end of the day, it's a person talking to a person.
Yeah, the bit that, judgment is the key, right? That when does that part get solved by technology? I think you can do some sort of a historical analysis to try to predict people that might be successful in certain environments or places, but we all know that that doesn't really work. Like it's an indicator at best. Yeah, I do think. I mean, the amount of spam that I get now compared to a couple of years ago from like automated BDRs or automated SDRs, like I think that role is gone. But that's where, like you said, the kind of outreach messaging can get structured, and potentially where folks like yourself and myself who run companies want standardized messaging. We don't want people writing typos, so maybe machine driven. Within certain parameters, it is not a bad thing. But yeah, you said it before with the video, right? It humanizes things, and then I think AI can dehumanize a lot of this stuff. But there's pros and cons, right? Because I think the whole issue with the industry is inconsistency. Like I could be a chief revenue officer and talk to you and have a great experience. I talk to somebody else and they don't understand me, the industry, and the market as well as I would want to spend my time. So yeah, I think that's kind of like where AI is going to do some of the heavy lifting for sure. It could make your job, my job, much more straightforward and enjoyable. But I think, the judgment piece is where people pay good money. Like if they're paying you on a search, they're paying good money for judgment. No, interesting take. So you're kind of split. You think there's areas where it could be super beneficial, and other areas you think it's not going to touch. It's not going to touch it.
If you have a candidate take a test, let's say like some of our clients use the cultural index, that can be, there's certain tests and there's certain things that you can do that can be very effective. But I don't see the day in the near future where the computer picks the candidate. That I don't that I think it's a tool. I think it's a tool and that will be used in conjunction with the process. But to say, let's just give this to AI and they'll give us candidates and they'll make the picks and we'll bring them into our business is a little bit, not far-fetched, but it's not here yet. Not here yet.
Yeah, I can't see it. I mean, there's too many changes on either side that could be pretty tricky. How far beyond the initial part of search, like how f do you go into onboarding and post-hire experience with your clients?
Yeah, so part of our history at SearchWorks is grounded in executive coaching as well. And so we match each one of our placed candidates with an executive coach who assists them through their first 90 days in their new role. Now, it's not our job to onboard the person. Where are you going to get your computer? Where's the bathroom? How do you use, this software? That's not where we come into play. That's on behalf of the hiring team to execute that piece of it. Where we do come in is the theory is if I'm a new employee, my significant other maybe doesn't know what I do. They don't really get my business and, my day-to-day. So I can't really talk to them about it other than the emotional aspect of it. If I'm a new employee and I am scared to ask my boss how to do something because I don't want to look like I don't know what I'm doing, you may not do that. You may not know how to effectively onboard yourself. So we're not training our clients on how to onboard people. We're training our candidates on how to onboard themselves. Sometimes that is as simple as saying, how'd your second month go? Oh, well, we had these meetings and I learned about the business and I told them I wouldn't do it this way. And I think that this is how it should be done. And we go, whoa, you're in your second month and you're telling these people how to do this. You need to listen. You need to listen. And then maybe month five or six, kind of bring that out. But many times it's about how do we train these people to be the best that they can be at the beginning of the process. And many times that's slowing down. Slow down, or it's saying, what's been your biggest hurdle right now? Well, I'm having difficulty with this thing. Well, how are you going to overcome that hurdle? They then say, well, here's what I think I'll do. And they verbalize it. And now they have just made the blueprint on how they're going to overcome that hurdle. We're not telling them how to do it, but similar to psychologists, you don't tell people how to fix their problems. You try and get them to fix it on their own by asking them good questions. And that's what we try and do. And so it's just a different person to go to. You might not want to go to the team that you're working for. You might not be able to go to your significant other. You might not be able to go to your friends, but here's a person who understands the industry, who understands the company that just hired you, who understands you. Many times this is someone who's a part of our team that's interviewed these people before, and they know the team, they know you, they know the role that you're going to be working within. And so they're one of the only people on the planet that can really help this person. And we do it for free. Again, that's at cost. We don't charge our clients for this. Again, if our candidates are more successful in their role, we look better and we get more business over there. So it's a sunk cost, but it's something that we find is of immense value. And our candidates love it. They absolutely love it.
Yeah, I think that's really good. Yeah, I think most half decent firms do check-ins and, you know, track people's progress. And, you know, we like to look at historical analysis of like how many people are still in seat 1 year, 2 year, 3 years post hire, and how many of them have been promoted or had lateral movement, you know. And also on the flip side, like how many don't work out, because we don't like that happening, but it can happen. But I think at the level of executive, you know, even potentially not just execs of big companies, but like even in startups and scale-ups, which is where we spend most of our time, like even first hires, like a first AE or a first product manager or a VP of finance, I think, you know, startups are pretty stressful places. I think it's a really good idea, good offering. And I think I can see how execs would like that. Like that's next level white glove type stuff, isn't it? I think so. I think it de-risks the hire as well. I think we're talking about a lot at the moment at OutScout with our clients. It's like people still want to hire people. They want to potentially level them up a little bit, so there's less junior hiring going on. Everyone's got to be pretty all hands on deck. But de-risking the hire where possible is a big thing if you can genuinely do that. Mm-hmm. And so I think beyond the profile and the hire, that 90 days of it's not necessarily giving them a soft landing, isn't it? It's just giving them a sounding board to maybe make better decisions, because they're not trying to influence too quickly, as you said. They're also not being too, I can imagine people go one way or the other for the most part, right? Is it you go too safe and too passive, but you could also be bull in a china shop and just burn the place. And I think maybe some need both, but probably middle ground is good. So you're putting guardrails on that, which I think is really interesting. Anything else that you guys do that you think is like, you know, helpful to companies that are, you know, going through these kind of times of bringing in sort of executives where there's probably like political shifts and stuff in the company?
Yeah, you know, I would say that honesty goes a long way. You mentioned earlier kind of part of our value is that consultation around the candidates. And I just last week on Tuesday, I had a client who was trying to make a decision between one candidate and the other. And their team was split. The senior leaders that have interviewed these people was split. They were actually kind of split. And so I talked with this woman, this hiring manager, for about 45 minutes about these two candidates. And I said, based off of what you have going on in your company, and I know about what this year has looked like for you and where this role is going moving forward, you got one candidate over here who is a grinder. You know, they're a little bit less experienced. They're going to take on a lot of that heavy lifting. They're going to grease the wheels, and they're going to probably do a lot of the work with the employees that are reporting into them. And they're going to be kind of more of a team member, maybe, than a leader. And this other person is going to be much more of a leader. They're going to delegate. They're going to manage this team, and they're going to maybe be a little bit better at a better sounding board for the board of directors, if you will. So that's two different types of candidates there. Either way, it was going to be a good decision because we had two great candidates in process. But me giving that type of a background of this is how I see this person working out 6-12 months down the line. This is how I see this person working out 6-12 months down the line. Now, I'm not God. I don't know for sure, but I do this for a living. And that discussion, we left it that night and I said, hey, you're not ready to make a decision right now. Why don't you sleep on it? Come back to me the next day. She slept on it, came back to me the next day. I went, I know who I want to hire. So that type of honesty, and I interview all of our candidates. I do it over Zoom just like this. I get to see their face. I get to understand who they are, kind of their upbringing, and really what makes them tick. And that, I think, does have quite a bit of value. Now, is that much different than what other recruiting firms do? Depends on kind of who you ask. But we try and be as honest as we can. I would rather go back to the market and try and find the right person than force or push my client to hire the wrong person just to fill the role and move on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like it's a real tough one, that, right? if you've got two people to decide, it's like forking the road, isn't it? Like if you've got one, then it's pretty straightforward. It's like, yeah, we want this person. Forking the road scenarios are really stressful for, I mean, anybody, to be honest with you, but like especially business leaders trying to pick the left or right or this person or that person, because I think that's when you have, Jeff Bezos talks about regret minimization framework and stuff like that. Like that can happen with hires if you've got two. But I think it's good to be like, well, you don't really have two, like A or B. It's very different decisions because, as you said, you're bringing back the detail. I think that's where even really smart execs get lost because they just get fatigued by the process and then they have to make this even more fatiguing decision. And so I think having people have been there from the beginning to remind them of the fact that, like, hey, this is what you said you needed, and this is where the business is at, and this is where it's going. Person A is probably going to be better for you in that regard. And they can either do it or not, right? They don't have to listen to you. They don't have to, but they probably should. Good. What curious to get your thoughts on that. Like, aside from AI, because everyone's talking about AI all the time at the moment, but where do you think the industry, and let's talk about like not just technology, but other areas that you guys service. Where do you see the industry going in terms of like search, talent acquisition for top tier talent? Like, what's next in terms of how the industry looks and how it's going to work, how it's going to fit into the future of work?
Yeah, I don't see it going anywhere. My father's been in the executive recruiting space for 30 years. So I've seen, even before I became a professional and graduated college, I would talk to him about this industry. I'd say, again, I go back to Indeed, because when Indeed hit the scene in the early 2000s, that was the end of the recruiting industry. You're just going to post the job. You're going to have applicants apply, and you're going to interview, or you're going to make a hire. It did have an effect, no doubt. It did have an effect, but these industries evolve, needs change. And the human-centric piece of it that we talked about earlier, I don't see that going anywhere. I think that's always going to be a piece of this process. And so there's going to need to be human beings on both sides and in the middle, if you will, to do that. I think that you're going to see a lot of staffing firms who are trying to hire, get hundreds of hires a year, implement AI for their outreach, implement AI for their candidate sourcing. And I think they're going to use those tools a lot in that space. And I think you're going to see more of the staffing companies implement AI a lot more than you will see some of the more executive recruiting firms implement AI. Because there is a little bit of a difference in the outreach that you make to these people. There's a little bit of a difference in how you consult with your clients about the hire. If you're hiring for a chief revenue officer, a CEO, a COO, you can't get that wrong. You can't mess that one up. And so there needs to be a lot more of that kind of white glove service that goes into it. So again, this industry has only grown over the last 30 years. It's only gotten bigger. There has not been a 5-year span where the recruitment and the talent acquisition industry for third parties has gone down. Human resources functions have expanded. They've gotten bigger within organizations. This human-centric piece is only continuing to get more important. And I don't see a time when recruiting and staffing goes away. I just don't see there being some cataclysmic event where all of a sudden the entire industry goes out of business.
No, I tell you, I was talking about this the other day. I do think that lower to mid-level contingency firms where people could actually make a lot of money, I think those days are potentially dwindling or like not on a thread, but I think they'll taper off. I just think, you could have much fewer people with technology doing the heavy lifting, being successful, but as depends what happens with rates. And obviously, I don't think, I hope we kind of don't get to sort of insanity days of 2021, 22, because I just think it's like I'd rather steady for a few years, frankly,
Yeah, it'd be
after the
nice.
last three boring years of just, solid. But I think exec search stays and does well. I think organizations become flatter and more people have to be operators and in, like, even a VP or a chief revenue officer, like that you've got to be rolling up sleeves in, not just in this environment, but I think for the next 2-3 years. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think everyone just got real lazy and complacent. So I think the changes should be where they probably needed, which is, you know, more enablement with better technology, not just like you mentioned, Indeed and actually LinkedIn. They're just massive job boards, aren't they? They just produce volume of noise, and they don't have the filtering in required for the kind of the people looking for the higher skilled or higher quality folks. So I just think industry has to smart up and offer more value, like you, like doing the producing the positions with video format up front as standard. Most people would never think to do that, I'm sure, because it's work and cost, and there's greed in the industry. And then the same with the 90 day kind of onboarding coaching type thing. I think that's really good. But yeah, it just has to smarten up. But I think you're right.
I want to leave you with one thing real quick, just to go back to AI for just 1 second. I want to leave you with a quote. I went to a Talent Outlook event for the Executives Club of Chicago a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about AI within talent acquisition. It was a bunch of CHROs of large organizations. And one of the women said, AI will not replace humans, but humans who can use AI and work with AI will replace those who can't. And I thought that was a very impactful statement. Basically, you know, she was just saying, if you can use AI to your benefit, you're going to be successful. And if you fight it and you can't use it, you're going to get left in the dust.
Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely right. I think that's a really good way of thinking about it, and just scaling yourself out, making yourself more impactful, and probably should allow you to focus on strengths, right? And then, like, you kind of outsource weaknesses to the AI, just call it the AI. Great. Well, look, I think a very interesting conversation. I think, yeah, you guys are clearly doing some very beneficial value adds for customers. Interesting to hear your take on the year. Like, you know, yes, it's been a bit trickier and slower, I think, but for the most part, leadership changes have been going on. I think it's really interesting that you're clearly very dialed into your space and have an opinion as well, which is good to hear, because I think a lot of people just sit on the fence at the moment with this kind of stuff, and nice to hear an opinion. What would you say, like, I think just a final kind of thought, like anybody out there that's thinking of setting up their own executive search type business, what would be your kind of like key pieces of advice for anyone thinking of doing that in this kind of environment and world we live in?
Don't do it. No, I'm kidding. I've been asked this question before, and it's a difficult one. You know, the barrier to entry in this industry is zero. You don't need a certification. You don't need a degree. You got a cell phone and an internet connection, and you can be a recruiter. So there's a lot of boutique recruiting firms out there, lots of them. But if you don't love it, and you don't like talking to people and being a bit of an extrovert and learning from others and being on the phone and having conversations like this, do not do it. If you want to sit behind a computer, you want to be an accountant, you want to not be that interactive with people all the time, it's not for you. There's a DNA and a love for human interaction that you need to have to be successful in this industry. And I'll say successful because you need to like it to be successful, and I think to a certain degree. And if you don't like it and you're successful in it, then what kind of a life is that? You're just doing something you don't like to do. So I think it's more about who you are as a person and your DNA rather than your skill set and what have you. So you need to like other people, because you're dealing with hiring managers who are people, you're dealing with candidates who are people. There's a famous quote that said, where there's people, there's problems. There's a lot of freaking problems in this industry because people on both sides, and it can be tough to make that happy marriage and actually get it to come through. So you got to love working with people and the psychology behind all of this and actually interacting with others. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, I think finding purpose and drive in like a mission that you just get a buzz out of, no matter what the result, like, you know, the process. And you know, people talk about the grind, but I think it is that kind of like commitment to process, and then in this case, obviously people, that you have to have no hesitation about like being all in on that. Well, Taylor, thank you very much. I really enjoyed talking to you. I think there's a lot of things for people to learn from this conversation, and have a great weekend.
I appreciate it very much. It really was a pleasure speaking with you, and I look forward to staying in touch moving forward. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you, Taylor.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Breakout. If you want to hear more, make sure to hit subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast to be the first to get notified when future episodes are released. If you like the show or want to share feedback, please leave a review so we can keep improving and share the word with other leaders in the tech talent space. If you have suggestions for topics we should cover, please feel free to reach out to either myself or Gareth.